Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And here we are for the fifth and last NRL podcast, joined again by Timmy Witt. And mate, good feedback last week. The fans, they love you. They've only been used to being listened to the two fat heads, but you got a rousing round of applause from the fifth and last listeners.
Thanks, mate. Only as good as your last effort. Obviously, look, Brock, unavailable again tonight. So once again, mate, happy to keep the seat warm until things return back to normal for round two. But mate, always good chatting with you.
All right, fantastic to have you again. And this show, as always, brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, make sure you do it with a true blue bookie. Download the app today or visit the website and back on board again this year. No surprise for all the listeners, Penrith Solar Centre, Jake and the crew there. The mad bastard, the Elon of Penrith, the one who wrote his own business name in his roof because he's got too much cash. If you're going to get a system, there's nowhere else to be. Don't be sidelined by rising power bills this season. Call 1800 20 29 30 or visit penrithsolar.com.au today. Elon of Penrith, Jake. All right, mate. NRL Vegas, it happened. What were your impressions just as a punter? Like, did you enjoy the games? Did you enjoy the spectacle? Cool. Did you think, from your perspective, from what you've seen and heard, that it was a success?
I think it was certainly a success. I mean, the interest and the media coverage over here, I think, was really pushing it. In short, it was just great to have some footy back on a Sunday. Even the earlier start, that 1:30 into the 3:30 game, you know, you and your brother and I, we all love our NFL, so there's nothing better than catching an earlier game. I think if they were to look at something, that's possibly something that could be altered to pick up a bit of that American East Coast market, whether that's a midday game or an earlier start. But look, as a spectacle, I think as a launching off point, you know, the Fox coverage was fantastic even during the week. I think they garnered a fair bit of interest. And I think for 2025, potentially four new teams going over there, it can only build from here. But in short, it was just great to kick off the season. I was probably left wanting for more. Two games to whet the appetite probably wasn't enough. But yeah, mate, how did you see things out?
To be completely honest, I loved the idea from the start, but I was a bit skeptical just because of the plan and the long-term investment. But hearing now, as it gathered momentum about being on Fox One, like a main channel, you know, have a Murdoch behind it. They had a few blunders, I think, on the way and like promoting it. But when it actually happened, the lead-in week, all the stuff at Allegiant, the games itself, the atmosphere, I think the week of or once Boots got on the ground, it looked absolutely fantastic. I don't think the two teams could have delivered a better game. And probably, I know a lot of people sort of still talked about the crowd and the tickets and there's expats, this, that and the other. You're blind if you don't see basically what Volandis has come out and said, which is why I like the bloke, plain and simple. It's not so much the crowd they're after, or it's not so much filling up that stadium once a year they're after. They want TV and they want betting money. There's a lot of red tape over here right now that's costing revenue, and it's going to cost revenue in the future because we're at a different place in the timeline as far as sports betting is going. But over there, they've only just had it legalized and they don't have the restrictions that we have. And I'm pretty sure when I looked a few weeks ago, just off my own bat, it was something like $330 billion in sports betting money. You pull 1% of that and you've already made up the difference in the 8 to 10 million they're projecting we're going to be losing into the future. And then to look at the numbers, I think the one thing that hurt me when I was watching, because I thought the first game was an absolute cracker, especially the first 15-20, was when they announced
the
college game went into overtime and didn't push it. Didn't start there. It pushed it to Fox Sports 2. So I don't know if that confused some people, but there was a lot of blood. There was a lot of stuff that happened in the first 15 minutes that I was sitting there rubbing my hands together going, if you're a US fan right now, just seeing three blokes casually walking around with a bit of Vaso and tape on your face going, yep. Compared to the NFL blokes going to the marquee, like I think they would have been shaking their heads going, what the fuck is going on here?
I think that's how they pick up the casual fan. You know, it was Sean Kepi got leveled by Jake Turbo and a few others, some big hits. Lockie Croker got opened up. I think you're spot on. And if there's one thing that Volandis does know as the chairman of Racing New South Wales, and obviously the online bookmaking is how to make a dollar through that market. And as you said, that's where it's going to be money for Jam in that American space. But I thought it presented well on TV. I was a bit skeptical about how short the sidelines were going to be and whether the wingers would come into it. I thought the four teams really still had a fair game plan to still get the wingers involved. There was a fair amount of tries out on the edges. But I thought it presented well on TV. I did see a couple of locals from Penrith out there, a couple of former real estate agents and current real estate agents taking the commission over to Vegas and enjoying themselves. And, I think that's the one thing. You need to start somewhere. It picks it up for year two. I think it's a great launching off point, potentially a weekend of games. So whether or not it's just the one day, I think they can only build on it. I think in a nutshell, it was a success. As I said, in the spectacle, I think you're right. I thought the first game was the pick of the two. It is a shame that it got pushed to Fox Sports 2. For those that love the American sports like we do, it's the same thing that happens on ESPN every weekend. If a game's going to overtime, there is a shuffle and there's a handful of other channels. That'd be the one thing that you could maybe try to rectify, but the American broadcast market's going to set its own agenda. But in a nutshell, mate, it's a success. And I thought the coverage from a lot of media outlets that went over there from Australia really covered it well. And yeah, looking forward to what they do next year and how many teams and whether or not it's spread over a few more days. What does it look like in year five, year six? It could be anything at this point.
Yeah, and I think I'm with you in the sense of the one thing I did look at was I know Penrith went and played World Club Challenge. Us going to America or UK probably isn't a whole lot of difference. It'd probably be a slight advantage for a UK team because they said there was a lot of Poms that obviously went over because the distance is only about 10 hours. But I don't see why you couldn't maybe either go a triple header or package a three gamer and have the World Club be a standalone maybe one night and then roll the double for the NRL the day after and maybe do it that way. Like if we're going to be going to the UK, why not take an extra game there, bring the English market into it if we're looking to invest in the English market to try and bring more expats in. And my own head was already spinning the other day when they talked about clubs wanting to be involved. Like for me next year, pending the World Club Challenge or who the Premier is, I think if you take the Warriors next year, tapping into another market, hopefully, I'd take maybe them and the Storm to go head to head. And then if Penrith are available or not the Premier or not in a World Club Challenge, somebody like them and a Parramatta to get a rivalry game round one to take sort of four clubs again, if you're going to go a fresh approach and go, all right, there's four more teams that have some sort of history, some link and cohesion and another way to probably tap into a few markets. And that World Club Challenge thing, I think, is a real possibility. If we're already going to fly that distance, I'm sure they'll be happy to take a shorter flight, and it's another thing we could package together with that product.
I think part of the buy-in as well was that it was actually 4 points. If you take a trial game over there or if it's an exhibition game, it just
Not the
doesn't
same.
really buy in. Even the teams cannot do that. The World Club Challenge is probably the asterisk in that conversation. That would make sense, to probably pick up a bit of that expat market for both the UK market, but equally, rugby league's not massive in the UK unless you're up from the north. It's well loved, particularly in the north, even in Ireland, but yeah, as to the teams next year, three of the teams that you mentioned, they seem to be the ones that have been identified. Penrith are obviously going through a stadium rebuild, Melbourne, another major city, and then the Warriors, obviously with all of New Zealand, that would make the most sense. Who the fourth would be if they keep it to four. I'd like to see another small step, maybe maintain it, tweak a few of the wrongs from this year, if there are any, from the NRL. And then maybe extend it out to a three game, a four game before you build up. But in a nutshell, I thought it was a great success. The only thing, as I said, is the fan back home was, I do love that full 8 rounds as you start the season proper, kicking off from the early part, and there's just saturation across the TV, or getting out to the footy, which is even better. But first world problems. We saw a great couple of games, and we go again this weekend.
And that's right, the deviants like us who sit there from Thursday to Sunday, you just want that fill. So when you got your first taste and it was all done and dusted by early Sunday afternoon, I was left wanting more, which works out very, very well, I guess, for round zero heading in to one this week. But to close off on that, I think great success. If we can tap into those markets and invest in it and move forward with it, like he's talking about those TV ratings, like I said, comparable to an MLS game. I know that's growing over there. There's a lot of investment. There's a lot more money. They've been pulling Messi's and a couple of older guys to sort of boost that up. So in terms of a first up and being on the main channels, I'd say, like you said, tick those boxes, but it's what we can do for next year. Announce the teams early, get some packages together, get the planning going, really try to put a stake in the ground. So by year three and four, if we are going to do a 5-year plan here, we're really trying to kick the door in for those two main reasons: TV time, bit of exposure there, and betting revenue. If we can tap into them, just that's going to be an absolute floodgate and sort of offset a little bit of that red tape that we're finding over Australia over more and more years of rules coming in with gambling. So thoroughly enjoyed it. But let's talk about the games. It's 3 days on, so we don't need to go too crazy here. Most people have already been through, but Manly 36-24 over Souths. I was impressed by both teams in patches. I guess the big thing for me, Souths early on, I thought they rolled the ruck quite well. Looked sort of like they were, maybe not so much in control, but they had some good moments. Cook was pretty dangerous. Cody got a repeat set. They cashed in those few times and some great moments for a few guys that wouldn't have expected it. Like Richie Kenner developed the deal on the outer, scores the first and last try in Vegas. Jacob Gagai, I don't know how many games exactly, but I'm sure he's played 100, 150 plus New South Wales Cup games to debut Vegas that occasion and score. Good for him, but Manly showed a hell of a lot of resilience. They went down twice, pulled themselves off the canvas. They looked very powerful. They were physical through their outside backs and their pack. Oluwatu is a hell of a player. That's a guy that I know he dropped off a little bit at the back end, as did a lot of Manly, but he's another one, a bit like Kalama Tangi for me last year, that I look at and think, if he's not in contention for Blue, I'm not here. And probably the one that really made me happy to see was Luke Brooks playing in a team that, didn't have all the expectation on him. I know he dropped that try, and I sort of thought that's a Tigers moment there. Maybe a bad juju on him, but he struck back later. He was confident. He was running short sides. Him and Turbo, the way they were playing, he looked sharp as well. Cherry steered the ship, and overall, they were very, very good. Even Brown, Croker's unsung, but for Souths, I sort of look at them and think, those lapses again to leak six tries. They almost had three more put on them in the first half. And then the worry about, I know they're going to get Jack back, but yeah, Campbell Graham's still going to be missing for a long period. That forward pack rotation, when they're on, they're on.
I agree, mate. I thought at teams that really ebbed and flowed and sort of changed hands a few times from an attacking side of things, and then you actually have like, the stats are the same. Like it's almost the same amount of possession, ball errors, everything that went with it. South just went to sleep again for another 10 or 15 minute period. Manly laid three on. And I thought some of the like I thought Latrell played fantastic, but for Manly it was really good to see Trbojevic brothers, particularly Tommy coming back, even Ben getting a try, which you probably wouldn't have bet that he would have been starting in the pack of, for round one. I thought in the pod last week you touched on Oluwatu for scoring a try. I thought he was a threat every time he touched the ball. And I was a bit the same with Brooks. I thought he was really measured in what he did. Cherry Evans still bounced from side to side. He still floated around the rucks. And it was only he didn't overplay his hand at all. Obviously, yeah, dropped that try and then ended up scoring one. But he just injected himself when he needed to. He wasn't going looking for it. He wasn't starving for that. I just thought Manly were more a threat across it. Souths, once again, yeah, a few injuries, few suspensions. So I thought they were a little bit lean at times, and then, could have easily got the lead and skipped away, and then just zoned out for a 10-15 minute period and had three put on them. And, I'm sure they'll come back. They get the Broncos in round two up at Suncorp. It'll be interesting to see how all teams respond. But yeah, I think they probably let Manly off the hook there for that period, and it was all over too quick.
Well, especially that start of the second half, Manly, a couple of errors, shot themselves in the foot, and Luttrell and Cody, a couple of nice moments to cash in. But yeah, to take sort of a 2-score lead and get yourself right back in control of things, I think that's the big thing I took away from Manly. In the past couple of years, there's sort of been not much resilience, but to bounce back twice from deficits and then take it to where they did, they looked just, yeah, big and fast across the field. The other one that only just come back into my head, he didn't make a line break, but my Lord, every time they jumped that left short side and fed Kola, if he didn't half get through the line or drag his man 15, 20 metres, like he just looked absolutely red hot. So the only downside for them, I think Saab did that hamstring after looking pretty good off his injury. The replacement option, they got Vega as a backup, but they're a bit light on in the outside backs. But they do have a young guy, Clayton Fualalo, who was in cup last year. I think he's on a training trial. And I read today, I don't know if it's true or not, that Fulton looks like he's heading over to England. So if that opens up, it wouldn't surprise me if they push Fualalo straight into their top squad.
From that, I saw the same news come out that Fulton looks like he's going to Bradford. Look, they might pick someone up cheap or promote someone there, but yeah, it's always a bit dangerous when the sniper comes out. Saab looking to accelerate, went straight for it. He's one of those rocks and diamonds players, and but when he's in open space, like that is a threat in itself. It will be interesting to see how they get that. I thought Souths as well, just on some of that defense. When Manly laid a couple of those tries on, there was some pretty flimsy defense. I know I said the stats were about the same, but just the nature of some of the missed tackles and how they went through, that'll come up in the tape this week, and it's something I'm going to have to look at for round two and beyond.
And that was the big thing last year. A lot of people, it was always their defense or big games or those sort of moments. And first half of the season, you're sitting there going, they're answering all that. And then some. They're attacking both sides of the field. They're not one-sided. Their pack looked good. And defensively, they looked like they'd finally found a bit of resilience. But just those lapses, like you said, it just doesn't pay when you're going to play better teams or bigger teams. And if they do that against Penrith, if they do that against Melbourne, Brisbane, et cetera, throughout the year, they're going to end up pretty much borderline where they were last year, fighting to make it into the eight.
I thought Manly's engine room also stood up. I thought Paseka went in his chances. He was really punching the line. Jake really led from the front, but even their outside backs, I thought Garrick was strong at centre. Was obviously moving in there. A little bit of a sneaky lineup when they're fully fit. That was sort of some of the discussion in about what are they going to do this year. I thought you saw it. In short, you can't be letting six tries in Souths and expecting to win games, and that's something that I think will be cleaned up. By Dimitri.
Some natural improvement, like we said, as they get some players back. But Campbell Graham, Jack, they make a difference, but he's a long way away. Jack alone can't fix that problem. And I've looked at their forwards. I still think they're short a little bit there. They're lacking probably another middle and the edge sort of setup. I'm not convinced of Arrow. I think for them, Arrow's a middle. I'd rather have him in that rotation, strengthen that, and Post. I know he's not like a home run hitter, but I think he's more solid when he just plays an edge. I'd probably rather start him. Have Arrow work my middle rotation, try and strengthen that up a little bit. Because Cam Murray, to me, like year on year, I watch him and I just think he's just getting more and more worn out, burnt down. Like the amount of times he turned up for loose balls, clean up tackles, this, that, and the other, it just can't keep going this way. And I think he's going to get to Origin again if this is the way they're going to use their forwards and just look like he always does. He seems to be just absolutely carrying himself by mid-season.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of that Dallas Johnson vibe, of I'm going to go hard and redline it for the entire 80 minutes and burn himself out a fraction. I think a bit the same. I'd have Arrow probably moving to the middle. Now they've got some young guys, Talis Duncan, didn't get a game, potentially comes in, but I think, their roster is a bit skinny in that space. But yeah, look, missed tackles. Cook missed a shocker on Sunday coming through the middle as well. As I said, look, it's round one. It's a bit of improvement there, but Manly were far the better side, particularly in that second half.
I guess probably the big thing, and that's why I had him just outside, is Tommy's health. He looked well ahead of where I thought he would be. If he stays in that sort of form and that spine stays together, genuine threat this year, legitimate dark horse. But he's the big one, touch wood. He stays healthy. But Manly fans certainly happy. Souths back to the drawing board. The second game, I didn't think it was as eventful. It was eventful, unfortunately, for some other reasons, but we'll touch on that at the end. But the Roosters 20-10 over the Broncos. I liked what I saw from the Roosters, and the main reason I liked what I saw is because I thought more of what I used to associate with them was back in terms of them in the red zone. I know it was a slimmer field, probably a little bit easier to defend, but I used to associate with the Roosters. You'd have those weeks where you'd look at them and go, they got caned to the penalty count. They made a shitload of errors because they were trying to play football. But inside 20, they just give you nothing. They'll sit on their goal line, they'll give up six agains, they'll turn you away two or three times, and they'd win some games where you just sit there and go, no one else is working like that off the goal line, defending that way and giving up that sort of penalty count and still winning a game of football. So it had a bit more of a vibe of probably 2 3 year ago for me, which is the main thing I wanted to see back with the Roosters.
Yeah, I mean, they start the season in the right fashion. They get the win. On the flip side, I thought the Broncos were pretty ordinary. They had 15 errors, double the amount of errors. Just looked like they lacked a fair bit. I know Flegler moving on, but even in the middle, I thought they weren't as it wasn't weren't as aggressive, weren't getting across the line that great. In the halves, look, it wasn't a great day for their middle, for their halves at all. Mam stats were putrid in short, but the Roosters going again, like they're a bit of a strange one for me. Like a lot of their meters coming out of trouble are still with those scoots from Tedesco, Manu. Like they go one out, they go one out. It's not like their halves really had to do a great deal other than lay it on. I thought the Broncos shot themselves in the foot as good as the Roosters were. I thought the Broncos were pretty ordinary. Long build up, lot to play for in there, backing up after last year. I think they left a bit of that in the change rooms, in truth. I thought, pick of the forwards for the Roosters, as I said, was probably Victor Radley. I think seeing what he turned out on Sunday is the Victor Radley you want to see for 27 rounds. You want to
Suspension
see
free.
just, like just leveling guys out without, getting in shit from the refs and going from there. But I thought he was very strong. Tedesco equally strong in what he does, but they've still got that, jinking across field, trying to punch through. It'll be interesting to see what happens. They get back to a full size field. They play against a team with a few more plays, but for me, the Broncos didn't fire a shot. They didn't let themselves have an opportunity for much of the game.
Broncos watching. To me, once they had that reshuffle, felt very individual. Like it was Haas doing what he usually does. Few guys trying to solve things on their own. Walsh obviously made magic a few times, but yeah, it felt very much. As soon as they had that shuffle with Pia Kuru going out, everything went out the window. There was no flow to what they were doing in attack. There was no connectivity. I must say, it's probably underrated moving Pat to an edge, which I don't agree with. They sort of lack somebody on their bench that sort of covers middle edge, but him going there, he's the indicator for their middle. He's the link. He's the ball player. He's the one who sets where the ruck needs to go. So when he moved out there, I thought that took away a little bit of what they're probably trying to do in working with their halves. But the Katewell move, I understood it. Like I would have started Pierre Crewe, but I actually wouldn't have released Katewell. I would have used, for their case, him as the guy on your bench now, which is super important, is to have someone that can sort of cover those multiple spots, whether it be centre, back row, middle. So for them chasing a title on what they already let go, I know it was more to put money moving forward into a few of those contracts, but you sort of see that hole where what they've got available, a Willison who they left out for Tapu'u, which I didn't agree with. Fletcher Baker can play a little bit. Hetherington's more a middle. Jaden Hunt, who they got over from the Dragons, like none of those guys really I look at on the bench and go, yeah, I'd want you to play back row for me for 60, 70 minutes if we lose Pia Kura. So I think that Katewell one was a slightly underrated, not for cap reasons and not for starting, but just for having that person on your bench when you've got your two middles and you've got that nine that they have to sort of look at and go, all right, if anything goes wrong here, or we need 20 minutes in the middle, or we need a center, this guy goes tick, tick, tick. He does all those jobs for us.
Yeah, I think on paper the Capewell move made sense for everyone. Frees up cap space. Warriors get a great, veteran now with a good head on his shoulders, a good team man. But when something goes against you, like the KO to Piakura, I just thought through that. But even through the middle and stuff, I just attacking wise, they just left a lot short for a round one. Equally, they get a chance next week. They come back. Back at home against South, equally two teams coming off losses. But yeah, for the Roosters were really solid in some respects. I didn't think they had to throw much at Brisbane, to be honest. Outside of Manu, who's an absolute freak, the round the corner ball and what he does and how he just draws in two or three every time. He'd had a kid the week before. So, big gun on his personal life, maybe
Giving him
going
what a go,
French
doesn't
rugby,
it?
this and that. And just turns up, lays it on. He was absolutely outstanding. I said, yeah, some good signs there for the Roosters after round one.
Yeah, like you said, I think that's the best Teddy's looked in a long time to start a year. Most of them, same deal. Radley lowered his target zone. That's good. The hit on Hetherington's what you want to see. That's going to keep him out of trouble. And probably the other one that really impressed me is Tyrrell May. Tyrrell May
Yeah.
just churned out. He refused to go down.
Massive.
He threw it in so many tackles. So, they've got an embarrassment of riches to think that, Angus Crichton wasn't in Egan Butcher, Jared's going to come back, Dom Young's still not there, and then they've got Sandon, who plays that role of nine fullback half. They've got Connor Watson in the same vein, who can cover nine half lock. So in terms of depth of position and where they're starting from, the Roosters, win's a win, and they're no doubt going to build on that. But just to finish us off, the Ezra Mann thing, obviously everyone's talked about it. I don't want to get too far into it, as to simply say it's going to be played out next week. If what is alleged to have been said has been said, completely against it, everybody is. There's nothing right about it. That should be stamped out of the game. It should come down on hard. But I'm also a fan of due process. So when everyone's already coming out and condemning and this, that, and the other, I know his comments post-game don't exactly help him. And from that, I was a bit like, okay, well, that's not really probably helping the situation when he says it's all fun and games. But I'm still about due process. I'm not about, lots been thrown. It's already guilty. Almost seems like a lot of people have decided the verdict. If they have audio, that's one thing. If it's just going off hearsay on the field, well, as being someone who played a lot of football, there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown out on the football field, rightly or wrongly. But I still think due process needs to happen. But it didn't sound too good. Let's put it that way.
No, I thought there was enough reactions on the field to think that something's been said or alleged to have been said. If it has been, it sort of boggles the mind with all the education that goes into players from the grassroots level up to the main one. That being said, yeah, certainly the comments post game by Spencer and even Robinson, I think they'd have their time again. Naturally, this is going to play out, but as I said, it is being referred to the judiciary. There's enough media outlets sort of covering it. It will be interesting to see what happens. I think, regardless, Spencer's looking at a holiday, if not a very, very long one, if it does come out. But that'll play out. So yeah, disappointing that that is alleged to have taken place. You touched on it before, though. The one thing in the Roosters' favour, which if Spencer does take a break, which all signs are pointing to that will happen. I thought your point there about Tyrrell May was huge. I thought he was actually the pick of the forwards, particularly the pick of the bench. Actually thought he outplayed Spencer, being honest there. The fact that they get three in back. But yeah, look, that was probably the one disappointing or the major disappointing thing. It was the disappointing thing of the Vegas thing that this overshadowed what was a great spectacle. Equally, it presents the game in a pretty poor light, particularly for the in the American market or even on the world stage. So with that being said, there's a lot that's going to take place over the next week in the NRL, and there's a lot of other conjecture about what's being said then. So, yeah, disappointing, but we press on.
Yeah, and that's have to touch on it, but don't want to dive into it and spend 20, 30 minutes going back on it. Due process will play out. See what happens, but yeah, it was more his comments afterwards that led me to think, okay, that's not really
Yes.
too convincing that this is going to be much of a back and forth argument, but
Yeah.
at the same time, due process.
And equally, for Ezra, you're hoping that he's in the right headspace. That if this has occurred, that there's some learnings out of it for everyone across the league and supporters and players alone. And that this or equally, he's in the right headspace to have a great year as well. Because if he can build on what he did last year, it'll be outstanding. But yeah, disappointing and a bit of a black eye for what occurred over the weekend, but there's a lot more of that to be said and played out in other media outlets for the moment.
Yep, let that take place. I don't think it's a bad thing that it's happening next week as well. I think things will cool down a little bit. It was all very hot topic the last few days, and a lot of players and other people have commented on the matter. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But like I said, it's going to get its due process. They're going to get time to look at it, and it'll be sorted in next week's judiciary. But we press on to the rest of round one and the preview for round one, brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, you know who to do it with. It's the True Blue Bookie who backs us and our charity account at the fifth and last and the first game to get us back underway of the six remaining is Thursday night, Newcastle Knights against the Canberra Raiders at Newcastle, 8 p.m. And in terms of lineups, everybody hangs on to week one to see what's happening. I wasn't really surprised for anything from Newcastle. Lucas gets first crack at that back row spot. He stuck with his halves for now, who got him to the finals last year. Cogger in the 14, and Kai Pierce-Paul, one of the buyers from Wigan, gets a bench spot there, sort of in that vein I spoke about before. Guy who can play edge, center. You could throw him in the middle if you needed to, but he's more that hybrid sort of back row center type at the moment. But for the Raiders, Ethan Strange, he's won the battle for the sixth jersey. No surprise, I think, from his display, particularly defensively against the Cowboys. Rapana for now at one. I think, Chevy Stewart's got a big future ahead of him, but he's only a kid, so they're not rushing him along. And the nine jerseys were wide open, but Levi teaming up with Starling, I think that's the right decision. And for them, they're going to get some guys back. Whitehead hurt his calf, I think it was, during the week. Horsburgh and Chris suspended for now. So big week for guys like Kotrick, Saulo, Arta, and Gula, because once those guys push back in, there's a few guys that are going to lose some spots. So how do you see this
Yeah,
one?
mate, I've got Newcastle on top here. I just think as the way that they finished off last year, I think the selection headaches for O'Brien were probably made a bit easy with Brayley being ruled out, obviously for this
Phoenix.
week. So Cogger coming in on the bench gives you coverage at 6, 7, and 9, and he's obviously coming off a bit of that role for Penrith at the back end of the year. So I certainly don't think they lose anything. Obviously, Dom Young being the major out from the side last year. Obviously, Tom Jenkins wanting to get the spot, but missed out to Tuala to start. I think they'll probably be too strong up there. The first home game, well, that place is going to be rocking. We've got a couple of mates up in Newcastle who are still talking about how things finished off last year, and I think that'll be close to a sellout on Thursday night. So it'll be great to see that. For the Raiders, yeah, it's about seeing how some of these young guys are going to come through. And I like the selection of Strange at six. I certainly think there's a lot of depth and a lot of young guys in the back line there that there's probably going to be some turnover this year, and there's going to be a few guys getting a look. But just with a couple of the outs, I know Horsburgh is still out for a little while. And obviously Whitehead missing. Hosking comes in, who's for me a fantastic
Great value.
player and a great replacement for a guy to come in and start. But I just see Newcastle being a bit too strong in this space.
I'm with you. I think if you're going to go head to head, if we're giving tips, I'm on Newcastle as well, like yourself. But I think almost $3 about Canberra with Blue Bet. They're 2.95 now. The Knights $1.40. I think the 7.5 is pretty generous. I look at this more of a 1-12 game. So if I was going to take Newcastle 1-12 at threes, I'd probably have a look at. Or if you like the start, Canberra at 7.5, $1.90. I think they'll give a good account of themselves. That forward pack's too good. Like a lot of people predicting Spoon, I think, are insane. When you look at teams like the Tigers, the Dragons, who are going to be well coached but lacking some talent, even the Bulldogs, I know they've got some good flash players in some other positions, but to basically have zero middle. When I look at Canberra, I do not see that problem. I see the opposite problem. They've got three or four guys playing cup who could be playing in other teams. It's a very solid back line. Your big question is where are points coming from? And that's with having this spine. We'll see what Strange can do, what Levi Starling can do. A lot's going to be on Fogarty. Rapana's just a madman. He'll make 200, 300 metres, run, offload, and probably decapitate somebody. But I think for Canberra, metres and yardage are not going to be an issue. It's about what they do when they get inside the 20.
I think for Canberra too, this is going to be, a first look at a team that is nowhere near full strength. Sebastian Chris still out, as I said, Horsburgh still missing.
Whitehead.
Whitehead has some misses this week. There's going to be some green shoots coming off that development tree down there, and a bit of competition for spots across the entire roster is not a bad thing for what Canberra needs at the moment. If they're going to develop from within, this is the year to do it. As I said, I'd be taking Newcastle, possibly with a little bit less than that start offering of 7.5, but I think it's a tough ask around one up there. But your point around the engine room and that forward pack is, yeah, look, that forward pack is too good to discount this year comparable to other teams. And yeah, I think it's going to be possibly a task too hard in round one, but then nowhere near full strength. And if I was a Raiders fan, I'd be very interested. Obviously, we're a little bit close to this, no doubt. But just looking at that pack alone, there's representative forwards littered through that lineup that you don't have at other clubs.
No. But yeah, all that being said, again, logic, I'm with you. I think Newcastle, round one, home, 30,000, absolutely crazy Novocastrians. But yeah, I don't think Canberra's going to push over. So those odds again with Blue Bet, $1.40 for the Knights, 2.95 for the Raiders, 7.5 the start. We move on early Friday, Warriors Sharks over in New Zealand. I think, again, this is another one where for round one, after the way they finished last year, this is going to be absolute pandemonium. Taintua Piki takes the one for now. Chance is going to be missing for a few more weeks. But again, with the depth they've got, I don't think that's a concern at all. For guys like Tavanga and Pompey to miss out with what they've got in this year with Sheck and the other guys they've got on board, even Morata missing with his foot, I still think this is an absolutely the stacked lineup. So for the Sharks, hard road trip and their team this year, not really anything of change. They've been very steady for the last few years, but Finucane off the bench, which I'm not surprised by, and Oregon starting, probably looking for a bit more leg speed and impact with Rudolph off the bench. This one for me, it's not a fait accompli, but if I'm the Sharks, this is probably one place I didn't want to go week one either.
Yeah, I'm with you, mate. I look just quietly. It's a great set of games for Friday night football. Get a
Belter.
pizza and a six pack and just strap on in. It's yeah, for me, the Warriors over there. I think to your point, the way that they finished off last year, the buy-in from the crowd and just the wider community, I think the place will be absolutely heaving. Equally, I think they're arguably stronger with Capewell and that coming in. To leave Tavanga out is crazy for me. And not crazy, crazy that they're the ability to do it. Whereas on the flip side, yeah, the Sharks, I think it's going to be a tough ask for round one. I think they're still going to have a strong year, but just looking at their bench, like they've gone forward strong. Finucane, Williams, Rudolph, and Hazleton. If something does go a little bit wrong there, there's not a great deal of coverage other than McInnes at nine. Not a great deal of coverage at six or seven. So certainly not wishing that upon anyone, but yeah, the Warriors would be too strong for me. I see it as a win, and that'll kick their season off nice and properly.
And to the point you've just made, you've got the Warriors with Lussie who can play 9 and 13, Alofa'a straight up middles, and then Walker, who's just a Swiss Army knife, 6, centre, lock, half. Like they just, yeah. And even within their side.
Walker last year was,
Oh.
amazing for me. Like the versatility that he showed. Early in his career, I thought he had a fair bit of talent, but I think he actually, he produced the efforts last year, and the coverage there. But just once again, like I just think that the Warriors are going to be too strong. The depth that they've got across their roster, round one at home, that'll be a packed house. It's the way to kick off the season back in New Zealand. I think the Sharks are up against it.
I think Fenua Blake will also want to give Cronulla a taste of what they're.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Going to get in 2025 as well. So I think this pack, I love Barnett being there. He's an absolute psychopath, one of my favourites. Interested, probably one thing to see if Ford and Catewell flip edges. Catewell's generally played left. Ford was on the left last year. Does he go to the right? If he goes to the right, I don't think that's a bad thing. That was the dominant side for them. That was Johnson. That's going to be Sheck. Chance when he comes back sweeping around. But looking at this one, I think we're both on the Warriors head to head. You agree with
Yeah.
that one?
Yeah, $1.51 plays 256 or around those odds. For me, that's definitely there. Warriors head to head at home. That looks like the logical choice.
And those odds from bluebet.com.au, $1.50 at the moment are the Warriors. The Sharkies, 260 minus 4.5 is the line. And my best bet for the week has gone up for the fifth and last. I went for the Warriors into Sheck head to head. I think that right edge was red hot last year. Siffer, if he's still on the left, he's going to be there. Very powerful man. But the left and the right foot of Roger, if they open things up like they like to, that nice fan shape, and he gets a one-on-one, I could see Roger week one. Maybe find his way over the paint. And if he doesn't, I'm not sure if he will be there, but I'd also be a sneaky shout on whoever the back rower is. If Ford is flipped over to the right-hand side, it's a new left-hand edge with Trindle, Siffer and Teague Wilton returning from injury. I think the Warriors will look to find some love.
Yeah, and look, just another side note. It's good to see Will Kennedy come back
Great
at
call.
fullback now. So obviously injury plagued year last year, but yeah, Warriors, you know, still missing chance, and it can only get stronger as well. So too strong at home for me, the Warriors.
Yep, we both agree on that one. And then our boys head to head. It's the Storm, 8 p.m. Friday night at home up against the Penrith Panthers. Disappointingly, a couple missing from each side. Munster still under a cloud. They're saying he's going to do a captain's run tomorrow. And if he's not good, Pezzett will come in to replace him. They've had some changes in the forward pack. Nelson not available. He's been injured at the back end of the preseason. Joe Chant forces his way in a start in the back row. Huge leap for a guy that come over from Catalan. He's only a young man. He basically learnt the whole year last year in the Melbourne system and playing reserve grade. Got a couple of games late in the year, but that bench is what worries me. I do like Alec McDonald. He's another one who was only a fleet kid a few years ago. It's year three now, so hopefully a bit of improvement. But between him, Lewis, like Wishart, who's more coverage, and Welch, it's fairly light on. But for the Penrith Panthers, May in the centres, it's pretty much the same side that travelled to England, except Kenny missing, Luke Summerton in at nine. Garner keeps the back row spot while Sorensen is missing and the bench for now. Peachy continues to hold that utility type role. Lindsay Smith, Henry, and Eisenhuth are the middle types. So I guess if they needed an edge, it could be Peach or Lindsay. Henry's more a straight up middle. I sort of thought that Sony may have got a look in, but again, they've stuck with Peachy there for the fact he can cover a couple of roles. But how do you feel about
Yeah.
this one? I'm very iffy. Like, I know the record, however many years in a row, it's the 22nd season, I think, for Craig Bellamy. He's now the longest serving coach at a single club. Wayne Bennett had 21 consecutive seasons. Craig Bellamy is starting his 22nd.
Yeah, it's look, what's the record? 22 years on the bounce, Melbourne have run one round one games. I earlier in the piece before Munster's under the injury cloud and whatever else, I'd probably thought just on the back of the World Club Challenge, Penrith might be up against it, away game here and there. But like I'm actually tipping the Panthers to break the hoodoo this year. You're spot on around the reserves. I think that's going to be the issue for Melbourne this year, is particularly through the middle. Yes, you lose a Nelson who's coming in. You can't match the size of that giant human in the first place, but I just think that that's where they're light on. Equally, Penrith, you know, have lost a bit of their bench in comparable years, but I'm interested to see how Liam Henry goes. We didn't see a great deal of him in the World Club Challenge. The game and conditions didn't necessarily allow for it. Summerton gets the nod for Kenny being suspended for the first round. I think the reason that maybe Summerton comes in instead of Sonny Luke is just straight around defence. You know, Mitch Kenny's a big hole in the middle there, so that's going to be the task for Penrith. But I just think the forwards, Yeo, Martin, and even Garner on the edge there, and you go with the Bash brothers. I think that's going to be where it's going to be won and lost. Still, I think it's going to be a couple of rounds before Penrith get their combinations in order. Luai getting a run, so first game of the year, coming back from injury, but there's probably a little bit too much in favour. For Penrith, with Munster potentially being ruled out. Even if Munster comes in, I'll actually go with Penrith for the upset this year. They've had the wood on Melbourne for the last few times, but it's going to be won and lost in the pack for me, and that's where I'm putting my chocolates in it for the pennies.
Yeah, I'm similar to you. I'm not big on either bench. And even with the Sony thing, I'd keep Summerton where he is. I actually like Summerton, but I just, for me right now, I look at Eisenhuth and I'm sort of like, well, I'd rather just carry Lindsay and Liam and have Peachy, but I'd rather have that straight up nine just to bring a point of difference. I even think with Kenny at times, that point of difference with Sony, defensively, you don't want him out there too long, but he's an absolute live wire. Whereas looking at what they've got there now, like you're obviously going to lean heavily into Laiota and Fish and try and get more minutes to try not leave Lindsay and lay him out there for too long. But if with Munster being under a cloud, I was sort of thinking Melbourne might be able to pull something from the fire. The Nelson thing's just another sort of hammer blow. So if I was going to do it off logic, I'd say the Panthers. But my heart and the streak, I'm very much hoping that we pull out a miracle at Amy Park. But this is difficult. I think two teams that love to start well, Penrith will be seething. It's another World Club Challenge loss than they lost to Brisbane last year. I think they'll have no more motivation, seeing as though they've basically benchmarked this whole process off Melbourne, than to end that streak, just like they knocked them out to get that prelim to take the step after losing the grand final to then go on for the three-peat. So Yeah, I think it's going to be a very motivated Penrith side, but the odds with this one with bluebet.com.au, Penrith, $1.58 favorite, it's 240 for the Storm. -4.5 is the line. Again, I think it's more a 1-12 game. Depends which way you like things. Try scorers I find hard again with these teams early in the year. If Munster's missing and Pezzet ends up being on that edge, and Joe Chan, he's going to be on that left-hand side with Pezzet. That's sort of where I'm looking. So that would be Penrith's right-hand side. You're looking at Liam Martin and Nathan Cleary, one of those two, I think. Sell an inside shot dummy there to poor old Joe Chan or something like that on debut, but or not debut, but starting debut. That's probably where I'd be going.
Yeah, I think so. I think the back row for Melbourne, I think there's a lot of upside for Melbourne supporters. But Chan, Katoa, and Liero up against Garner, Martin, and Yeo. I'm favouring Penrith in that space. I take your point about Eisenhuth. Look, he's a toiler. He's been around for a long time. He's filling a job there. I think as they get more minutes into Liam Henry, or even as Mav Geyer or some of the younger guys develop through, I think there'll be a bit of a swap in and a swap out at some stage this year. But for Penrith, it's probably about getting those bench rotations right. I think we've seen it too many times with Liotta and Fish going off at the same time, and it does soften up. Obviously, been in the grand final, but it also happens in a lot of other rounds. I just think they're probably going to want it coming off, as I said, a little bit heartbroken after that World Club Challenge and a bit of fire under them. I think Luai also coming back in is probably going to have a point to prove. For a round one header to start off, I think it's a great task for both teams. I think you'd want to face someone really tough in round one and then proceed into the following weeks. But yeah, I'm going to back the Panthers. Everything against me in weeks preceding was that the hoodoo would continue Melbourne in Melbourne, but I'm going to go with my boys, mate, for round one.
Yep, I'd agree with you there. Given especially if Munster's out, I'm off that. But Eels Dogs starts off Saturday 5:30. This one I don't have a whole lot to say about, to be honest. I just think Parramatta's forward pack is stacked. I think the bench is stacked, and being an old meathead myself, if you don't win the middle, you don't get to play football. And when I look at a guy like Max King, I think he's a worker. Bowassa was on a development contract, so he's been from club to club. Now he's suddenly starting for the Bulldogs, and then they're going. Curran, who's going to have to do a job in the middle. Like a lot of people are saying, he should play edge or lock. There's a reason he's not. He has to be in that middle rotation because they've got nobody. And big Sammy Hughes, I watched him as a junior at Parra like 3 or 4 years ago. This is a hard debut. He's going to be up against two Origin front rowers. They got Lane back out there with Cartwright, who finally looks like after almost a decade, he's maturing and finding his best football. Hopgood, and then they roll in Offahengawi, Madison, and Tuolungi. I just look at the forward pack and think, how's that going to win? They're going to win the middle, Parramatta. They're going to win the middle.
The big question mark for me was what side was Serralda going to name for the Dogs? Like, they recruited so hard in the off season, and there were so many utilities and outside backs and even stopgap guys in the halves. The of interest is seeing that, yeah, okay, it's been named now, we can press on. Bronson Cherry missing out. That's probably understandable after 4 years. He's going to come in. Obviously Carras moving to the centres. But yeah, I'm with you, mate. I've got Parramatta winning at home equally, another home game. But this place will absolutely be thumping. The rivalry between the two teams, it's the right way to kick off round one. So the scheduling's, big tick there. But in the halves, Dylan Brown, Mitch Moses up against Matt Burton and Drew Hutchison.
It's a mismatch.
I think Burton's got to actually show a fair bit more this year. For the money that they've paid him, for the job that he's been meaning to do, you probably haven't seen enough of that game management. He's got the massive kick on him, but there is a chasm between the talent in the halves there, and with the forward pack pushing them forward, it's all in Parramatta's favour. For Dogs fans, there's a lot of options this year. Like, if one guy is injured, you've got so much coverage in across multiple spots. But the one thing where I do think they're light on with you, mate, I think in the engine room, the forward pack, I think it is a fraction undersized and underdone, in comparable to other teams. And that might be the thing that works against them for this season. But for round one, yeah, I've got Parramatta winning at home convincingly.
What makes it scary for me, though, is again, Palace's a short burst sort of guy. So he's not going to play big minutes. Curran can hold his own. He will play big minutes, but Hughes on debut. So in that genuine four-man rotation, The only guy there who has minutes is King, and even King is probably still 45, 50 max. So you're talking about a debutant, a 25, 30-minute blowout, and then Curran, who's just going to absolutely have to work his dinger off. And even Salmon, like, he's been playing utility roles, different roles all these last few years. I get the thought process. Junior Kangaroo, number six, skillful guy. Put a bit of size on. They're going to look to take a bit of that yo role. Serraldo's from Penrith. He wants to play middle service. He's got that sort of setup. I don't mind that move, but your genuine hard middles are going to be doing that yakka for you. It's not even just the guys that are there. Like, I honestly sit there and look at that and think, I do not know how the minute rotation is going to work here. And you can have Kikau, Preston, Crichton, all the flash on the edges, but if you don't do the job and punch holes in teams, it's going to be very difficult. So I think they're going to call on Fox, Carraz, who barely had a preseason, Crichton. They're really going to have to help out in yardage to help those big boys.
Yeah, for a glass half full conversation, I think there's so much to just watch for what the Dogs are going to do this year with so much new talent. Preston having year two, Kikau back full, fully fit. There is a lot of upside that can take place, but just when you're looking at the lineup in this case, or even the roster and representative internationals, just even maturity across the entire pack there or the entire roster, it's up against them. And everyone's talked about who they've bought and why they've bought. There's an argument that there's a lot of guys at training sharpening each other up. Cream will rise to the top analogy, but yeah, in this case, for round one against Parramatta, with equally didn't have their best season last year, we're absolutely injury riddled. Lane comes back in, forces Madison to the bench. You're spot on around Cartwright. I think he finally came of age in the last probably 18 months, two seasons evenly, but last year really showed something. I think they're going to be across. And Jermaine Hopgood, I was filthy when Penrith had let him go. Admittedly, you can't force your way into there, but he's one that I would have loved to have kept. He showed what he could do last year. I'm hoping that he builds on for next season. I'm sure that he will for this season. Sorry, I'm sure that he will. But yeah, it's the pack for mine for Parramatta and the halves coming off the back of that. That's going to do the damage.
Yeah, 6 to 13. I just look and go, wow, that's such. It's not even close. The back row for the Dogs is good, but if you can't go forward, you're not getting any quality balls. So, bluebet.com.au, they agree at the moment. The Eels are $1.44. The Dogs are 280. Minus 6.5 is the line, but they want to get off to a good start, I think, Para. There's been a lot of talk about Arthur and their off-season, and Gutherson copped some flak last year, and guys that were either injured, and Dylan Brown's got a lot to prove after what happened last year as well. If I was going to have a pop at something, I like that left edge. I think Lane and Brown back together, they had a big year on the grand final run. They've got a stack of middles there. So if I was going to have a pipe on somebody, it would probably be going either Dylan Brown or Sean Lane. And equally, if I was going to go the back rowers, I like both. If you like one or the other in terms of the edges, I could see one of the power back rowers crashing over there. So get on board. Titans, Dragons. Perennially, I don't like matchup hoodoos, but the Dragons have actually been quite good in their history against the Titans. And this is a late Saturday game. So for them, Jaden Campbell missing, Dave Fifita missing for a month. Foran, he missed the last trial with a calf. That always worries me because he's just a ticking time bomb. Brimson in the centres plays game 100. Isaac Liu off the bench plays game 250. And old Desi, no surprise, he likes to change things up. He's got the dual nines. He's pushed Verrills back to the bench. He's starting with Randall. He's your more Barry Basic type, which is what Desi likes, a tackle and pass type of guy. And Cleese Haas in the back row. I wasn't expecting that. I know Dave's not healthy, but I didn't think that was going to be the option. But again, I've liked what I've seen, but it's a big ask for somebody with only a handful of first grade games to take that role on. Whereas on the flip, the Dragons, I know it's not impressive by name, but I instantly saw Shane Flanagan influence on that team in the two games they played. They were gritty, they were nasty, they were physical, they just fed early ball to their big centers, they worked hard out of the backfield, middles did their job. Ben Hunt was freed up by Kyle, who steered things. And, as much as I look at the Titans side and guys like Kinney and see all this flash and talent, I still saw the one thing. And again, I don't like reading the trials that was missing defensive effort. So I sort of lean towards the Titans if you want to go off talent, but I do not think the odds here reflect what I think is going to happen. I think the Dragons are going to make this an absolute shit fight.
Yeah, mate, I'm with you. I actually thought it'd be far closer in the odds betting. I'm actually tipping the Dragons here.
There you go.
Look, I
I was close.
till they show another 3 or 4, I can't trust the Titans and haven't for ages. Used to give your brother a lot of shit when he was a Titan supporter on
years.
that. But I think with Fifita out, equally, what's the mad scientist doing in Dez? Haven't really seen a great deal come out of the Titans media-wise over the summer period, and obviously the way that Dez sort of likes it. But I think I equally don't think the Dragons are going to do a great deal this year, but I think there's a bit of stability in the fact that they came out early doors and said, yeah, Lomax is going to be on the wing. That's how they played it in the trials. Bird looks fitter than other years playing in the centers. I think they're pretty strong defensively. That's going to be the Shane, the Flanagan sort of mentality of really toughening up that space. I for the life of me, I thought this would be far closer. I thought it'd be $1.80, $1.95, around the $2 mark. I was sort of a bit aghast with seeing the odds there. I'm actually going against it's $1.47, the Titans, $2.70, the Dragons. Saturday night on the Gold Coast, I doubt they'll be selling the place out. I don't think they've had a sellout since, the early years up there. I'll actually tip the Dragons here. And if I'm looking for a punt, I'll be taking them with the start, if not a little bit, less than the start, because yeah, I just can't put stock in what the Titans are going to do. In a month's time, I think there'll be a better form line. But yeah, Dragons had a pretty poor year. But the thing I have liked about them coming out early is the fact that they were quite clear that Sloane was going to have the one jersey, that Lomax was going to have to move out. He was strengthening up those edges with Bird and Sully in the centers. It's not exactly the game of the round, in my opinion, far from it. But if I was sitting there, yeah, I'd be maybe taking the Dragons here head to head, or even just with a bit of the start.
I just think again, I know the whole father son thing, much like Jacob Arthur, people hanging on and people hanging on Kyle the last year. He's not a bad footballer. We gave this sort of example last year when you watch Cup and you watch NRL and people go, this guy's bad. Go watch Cup and then you'll see the best backups. The best backups playing Cup the last couple of years, Trindle, Jacob Arthur, and when Flanagan's down at that level as well, whether they used him at nine at the Dogs, even though he wasn't really happy over there, he played good football. So the one thing this kid can do, he's not physically huge, he's not big, he doesn't dominate, doesn't do this and that. He'll steer a side around, which frees up Ben Hunt to do what Ben Hunt does best, which is run the football. So I think for them, they're just going to be as tough as a $2 steak. Like seeing guys like Eisenhuth in the back row, who are toilers, DeBellin, like he's just got workers here, they're gritty. The one I absolutely love under Flanagan, I think he's going to have a huge year, is Jaden Sewer. That's his type of one. I think he's going to be back in sort of origin talks. And they've got a debutant, young Viliami Fifita. He was highly touted by us at Manly. He's had some injury issues. He can play middle or edge, but big body, dynamic, good footwork. I think between him and Faetala Marinho, it gives him a bit of versatility off the bench there to play middle or edge if need be and bring a point of difference compared to your Lawrys, your DeBellins, your Eisenhuths.
I just think with the Titans, with Fifita out, like nothing would shock me in how this plays out. Either side could be touched up, could be a golden point. It's really just a watch and see game for me, from a punting perspective. But look, the benches for both teams, look, they are pretty light on in comparison to other teams who are up against other sides this week. But yeah, just. I just liked the way comparing the two sides, the fact that the Dragons are maybe a little bit closer to full strength and maybe have worked on the combinations. Obviously, they come up against the Tigers game. We watched that together with Box. The Tigers weren't great that night, far from it. But what you did start to see is a bit of the foundations of what Flanagan's going to want to do there. Whereas I think there's probably a few too many out for the moment for the Titans, but with where those odds are at, yeah, that was probably the most shocking thing that I'd seen this weekend.
The only thing that stands out for me is Mo, Tino and Palacia. It's a mint middle, but Bo Fomor's going to take some time off injury. Cleese there. Like in a few weeks, if Fomor's up and running 6 or 8 weeks with Fifita, that's one of the best forward backs in the comp. But I still don't trust him defensively. And I don't trust Foran to finish the year or Verrills to finish the year. Or Brimson to finish the year. Like those sort of guys that have been in their key positions just don't stay healthy.
It's
So.
like they're a different lineup when Fifita's in there. Don't get me wrong. For this week, he's not there. And yeah, it might be just a grit fest on Saturday night. But I'll go against The odds here, I'll tip the Dragons.
Yep, with bluebet.com.au, 270 for the Dragons, $1.47 Titans. I don't mind the 270 either, but if not, I'm probably going to get a multi. I reckon I'll drag out a few starts and put some head-to-heads together, but 6.5's not too bad. You could take that 10.5 and probably still get something decent enough to give you some value in a two-score buffer. But the last one to finish this up is the Dolphins and the Cowboys. This one at Suncorp Sunday standalone, 4 o'clock, Queensland Derby, at the back line. Avarillo not featuring. He's on the outside of the squad, new in the centres with Farnworth. Bostock, the young bloke they bought from the Steelers up from the Dragons, gets a start on the wing. He's put a lot of size on. He's a good future prospect. Probably no surprises with their spine. Forward pack, Lemuelu in the back row with Kafusi. Stone starting at lock now. Gilbert's out. Flegler with Jesse. And the bench is Kerr, Plath, Kenny, and Nichols. For the Cowboys, Leibert gets the nod in the centres over Viliamavalea, who a lot of people thought would have been the first crack there. Dearden with Chad. I don't think there's any surprises really in the forward pack. It's a hell of a back row with Lukey, Nanai, and Cotter. And your bench is Neame, McIntyre, Fine-Fuiaki, especially now with Hess out for the year. But the one that keeps getting me is Granville. I know he's been a great player, great servant, and they still look at him and say that he can cover 9 and maybe 13. But for me, I'd have Tom Chester there. That's a guy who's come through playing 13, halfback, fullback. He's a really, dynamic sort of player. But I think for me at this point in time, I wouldn't be having Granville on my team. But if we're talking head-to-head here, I think the Cowboys have to win. I know the Dolphins started with a bang last year. I think they're a year older. I think some of that hype around being the new club and proving a point for a lot of guys has sort of worn off. And I think there's way too much talent in the Cowboys. So I like them. I'm not going to get overly excited, but if they start bad and things are a bit iffy, I think there might start to be some issues. But I think there's way too much talent.
Yeah, I'm with you with the Cowboys, mate, just on a bit of that talent. Look, it actually wouldn't shock me if this is a super tight game or even the Dolphins do aim up. Obviously Farnworth coming into the team, Flegler also getting a go there. They've added more depth than last year, the Dolphins. But I just think that Gilbert injury in particular is going to be one that stings for the duration of the year. They may get up for round one and it may start to plateau across. Same with the Bromwich brothers. They're an extra year around the sun there. You don't know how they're going to really go in seeing out the full season. But I'm taking the Cowboys on basically their talent and names here. Like the way that they finished last year, I didn't love. It had a lot of the same roster. There's no guarantee that they're going to chalk up an absolute great performance just because of who they are at the moment. But just looking at this game on the Sunday, nothing would shock, but I am having to take the Cowboys here. Only just would even potentially consider the Dolphins with a fair start, just in case they did go from if I was going to have something on it. A bit to prove for me. Interested to see Reuben Cotter come back in. I absolutely love the way he goes about his business, particularly in the rep scene. He's a toiler. I think he's the new go forward man for the Cows. And just, I'm interested to see how this goes. But I'm tipping them, but only really just.
Big showing here for me for Tamalolo. That bit of talk again. Peyton doesn't mince his words, but there was more talk around him in the off-season. Captaincy's gone off him, and it's now on Dearden and trying to move in that younger direction. Hell of a fullback matchup too. You got Hammer, who wanted to be the fullback. They went with Drinky. I think they made the right decision. A lot of people said that was silly. I'm like, well, you can't keep someone who doesn't want to play anywhere but one. But I think the Cowboys have still got an extremely good fullback in Scott Drinkwater. The Nines is also a matchup I really like. I like Robson, very physical, likes to get out, works a ruck, but I think Marshall King was absolutely sinfully underrated at the Bulldogs. I can't believe they let him go. And I think the Dolphins got a good steal there. But yeah, I think if the Cowboys are serious and they find the attitude they had the year prior, and they're one of the better defensive sides. I thought they were one of the better teams play 1-2 last year to fizzle out and they copped 30 plus 5 or 6 times. It was not the team we saw the year before. And if they let this window slip, it's going to be a real disappointment. But yeah, a lot of watch and sees, especially Taumalolo, Chad at halfback. I honestly think if things aren't tracking the right way, I'd go as far to say that Clifford will take that jersey back. People forget that when Peyton took over, Clifford had some issues. He was on the way to Newcastle before the English thing. He actually had a really good month or 6 weeks, and everyone was sort of like, oh wow. And it was like he found a bit of comfort, found someone who was confident in, played some good football. He's now done that loop, gone to Newcastle, left again, gone to England, found his way back to Peyton. I don't think people realize he's still in his mid-20s. He's not old.
Yeah, he's look, he's following a bit of the same path as a few that have gone before him. Jack Cogger's,
Wayne
probably
Green,
just done the
Cogger.
year before, go to the UK, get a few extra seasons under your belt, come back with a bit of confidence. Look, Chad's on some big money. I think if it's going pear-shaped mid-year, that's the spot that's going to change. But Tom Lolo, he's going to get picked every week. It's just going to be minutes and how he's
How he
used.
plays.
Equally, I didn't know whether or not Tuilagi might push to the centres and Valame comes in, but they're obviously going with Labor, obviously representative player as well. But yeah, I actually think it's going to be a bit closer. I think for the early start of the year, you've still got Farnworth, the Bromwich brothers, even guys like Asako coming off the season that he had last year. I think it is a little bit closer than the odds would suggest for a round one fixture, but I am going to go with the Cowboys just based on who they're putting in there for the moment. But both teams for me, I think we both had them. I had them out outside the eight, the Cowboys, and we both had the Dolphins missing. I think it's going to be a crucial win round one, get the season rocking in the right way. But yeah, it's going to be a great game to watch all the same.
We know one thing, Wayne Bennett teams, regardless of who's playing, generally do the small things right in the early part of the year. So if the Cowboys are off, the Dolphins will be there. And old teammate, Mark Nichols, game 150. Can't believe it. 14 years ago now, under 20s. He's toiled away at a few clubs and really made a fist of it at South and now this time at the Dolphins. But turning 34 very soon, old Nico, 150 games, that's a hell of an effort.
Mate, yeah, good luck to him. When he was at Souths and you were thinking, okay, they're picking him up as a bit of a love deal, but he's still keeping on, and 150 games is fantastic. Just taking a look at the reserves here, the guys that have missed out for the Dolphins compared to last year. There's Jared Wallace, Jake Averillo, Ewan Aitken, and Isaiah Katoa. They were starters last year. And I think this is what you're going to see in that these new the team coming into the compies. There is going to be a bit of churn there, but they do have some depth. The Dolphins. Tom Gilbert was the big one for us. We both spoke about it off air and then also in last week. But I think that spot as the season goes along is going to be there. But like they do have coverage. That is a roster. So nothing would shock me with the Dolphins coming out, as you said, guns blazing round one and proving a point, a Wayne Bennett special. But yeah, it's with no great comfort, I'm tipping the cows for this week.
Yeah, I'm on the cows as well. And with bluebet.com.au, they agree the cows are $1.50 favourite. The Dolphins, 260, 6.5 is the start there. All the Queensland derbies, for some reason, in any shape or form, in particular when it's early in the season at Suncorp, tend to be absolute crackers. So that's not a bad one, I don't think, for a Sunday after. But all those odds brought to you by bluebet.com.au, that best bet of the week again. I did have a lot of confidence for week one, but I think Warriors at home, as I said, that place will be rocking that right edge, whether it's a Ford or a Sheck. I like that side, but I've gone with Roger and the Warriors put together. So $3.80, that's my best bet of the week. And just a quick look at the futures markets after the week that has gone at Vegas. The Broncos slipped out slightly to 450, but Souths were the ones who went backwards. They were nines, they're now back to 13, and Manly have shortened in. I think they're in the 20s, mid-20s. They're now 17. So they've moved themselves up in the betting. And Panthers still sitting pretty there, top of the market for Bluebet, $4 for now. So biggest mover, South Sydney. Wait and see, I guess, like we said, how they respond this week. And then once Jack gets in, how they're going in a few weeks' time. But anything else to finish up, mate? You got anything you like this week if you're going to have a crack?
No, I think some of those outsiders, maybe with a little bit of a start. Warriors at home, probably the Knights at home as well. I think, just the benefit of round one. In short, mate, it's just going to be good to see the footy come back and equally a bit of continuity returning for round two. The eight games across the whole week, as good as this was, I want my weekends jam-packed with footy and prioritising the footy over family events and all the good stuff that goes with it. But it's definitely it's going to be great to get it the rest of round one out of the way, mate, and in the books.
Well, particularly for me, Friday night, that's a belter doubleheader. The Sunday just gone was great. That Friday, Warriors Sharks into Storm Panthers ripper, but looking forward to all the football. Thank you again, bluebet.com.au, and fingers crossed we can kick off the charity account with a win this week. I don't know if I'm going to follow in with that best bet for the charity bet, but I think last year we cracked the $2,000 mark. Hopefully we can put together a nice kitty again. Thank you, Bluebet. Download the app today or visit the website. Timmy, big thanks again for jumping on. Absolutely outstanding, mate. Really appreciate it, as do all the punters out there. I hope you have a great weekend. And
Thank you, mate.
I'm going to hit you with one last random one, actually. I always used to do this with Boxhead. Do you have any TV shows, movies, books, anything you're into right now? Something you recommend for the fans?
It's still a few months away, but The Boys comes back in season four
On
mid-year.
Amazon?
If you haven't caught that, they're the three seasons to sink your teeth into. Think of X-Men as if, but normal people were trying to kill them. It's absolutely
That's enough.
fantastic. It's as ruthless as. I actually even caught a bit of the Six Nations doco on Netflix just
Okay.
as a point of difference. Caught a bit of that, which is a little bit interesting. I think that comp, the six international teams, and the window in which they do it. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, that it'd be something to get around with. I've got some family in France. They absolutely live by rugby over there. You're hoping rugby league catches on, but for this week, mate, they're my two little tips.
There you go. Bang. Everybody out there, they always like to know what we're watching. There's a couple from Timmy Witt. For me, it was Drive to Survive. It's back on. I know a lot of people have already been there with us. I sort of got a bit off it the last year or two because it was very Red Bull and they were winning, but they went into a few teams this year that were having some development stuff and some issues and some change, and it got a bit spicy. So if you were on the Drive to Survive bandwagon, the F1's on Netflix, the newest season's actually pretty good. So get a look. And I think, what's the golf one? Is it Swing, Big Swing, or whatever it's called?
Full Swing, I think. Yeah, it's not too
Yeah,
bad.
today, I
It's
think.
wasn't as ruthless as I'd hoped with the LIV Tour fallout and everything there. And it was. I love a sport doco, so anything that's going there. Actually, Sunderland Till I Die returned on Netflix as well. So
I saw that.
go back and watch the first season. Great friend of ours, Shuba Williams, is a Sunderland supporter. Essentially, before a lot of other teams were letting cameras behind closed doors, they invited a team in for their season in the Premier League and watched them get relegated,
Yeah.
which was fantastic. And thought, oh, we better back it up so we can return. And
And they happened
I
again.
won't spoil it for you. They end up going down again. So it's watching a car crash in slow motion for a couple of seasons over and over. But they have slightly improved in years gone by, and that's returned for season four. So these poor bastards in the north of England.
Yeah,
You
working
think we're
class.
fans? Yeah,
Love it.
catch a bit of that, mate. So it's a little bit sinister, but that's also a good doco, one from yesteryear that's returned out of nowhere as well. So yeah, keep your eyes on that.
Well, mate, I was with you. That one caught me because it was such a car crash, and I had to look at the preview. And then they're owned by like a 23-year-old billionaire Swiss guy or French kid. So,
Yeah.
yeah, they're
Well,
ruthless.
they go through managers like you wouldn't believe, and false promises, and yeah, up in the north of England, massive rivalry with Newcastle United, who've since been
Never
bought out and sitting top of the Premier League. Like, it is,
I'm a
you
Newcastle
think
fan,
South,
so I have no sympathy for Sunderland or Schuber.
you think South or Roosters have a derby that's nothing compared to those two. But yeah, it's equally like, go back a few years and get yourself a nice baseline. The first early years of just watching this car crash happen, episode by episode is, unless you're a supporter, it's a fantastic look. But yeah, that was great. And in the off season, the one that did grab me, and he's just retired over in the last few days, was the Kelce documentary. For those that haven't seen it, Travis Kelce's great. Yeah, I get the whole Taylor Swift thing, but if you don't want to have 15 beers with Jason Kelce, I don't want to know you. He's an absolute legend. So I think that's on Prime,
That's
maybe
Prime as
Amazon
well.
Prime.
The boys on Prime.
Yeah, I watched that with my wife, and all of a sudden she's into NFL even more than she was beforehand just because of that. So for the Kelce one, get your partners involved, make them watch it. Good family man. Might equal you end up watching more sport next season, which is the aim of the game.
Excellent. Well, there you go, people. We've got some suggestions for you if you're looking for a bit of content to fill your weeks around the rugby league. But how good it's back. We've had Vegas. Now we've got the other six games of round one. We get our first look at the other teams and get to start building a picture of where things are heading in 2024. Thank you, bluebet.com.au. Thank you, Penrith Solar Centre, Jake and the team. But most importantly, Timmy Witt, you're a star. Thanks for coming on again.
Thanks, mate, and good luck to your brother who's currently in camp with his team. They kick things off tomorrow night. So to Box, who'll probably come back into the chair next week and weeks moving forward. Obviously, that broken schedule for round one sort of worked against you boys, but thanks for having me, mate. Appreciate it. Good seeing you.
Mate, I think we're going to have you plenty more times this year if you're available. You've been brilliant. But to everybody out there, enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.